You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. It is a beautiful day.
Zach, every time this song is played, I have to be reminded of the time you and I were hosting Sports Talk Saturday, and you said, all, quote, from Zach Jones, all punk music in the late 2000s, or late 90s, early 2000s sounds the same.
Stand by it.
Stop.
Stand by it.
Get out.
100%
I thought
fact.
You were reformed. I thought you fixed this ludicrous idea that Fat Lip by Sum 41 sounds exactly like any other song from Sum 41. I don't know why I can only think of Sum 41 right now, but...
Interesting. It's almost like they're all the same.
No.
It's a shame. Sorry,
Stop.
Bud. Sorry, bud.
Stop.
Big day today. It is, of course, the NFL trade deadline. We've already got a number of trades coming in the NFL. We'll get to that here in just a second. But I also do want to remind everyone, of course, it is Election Day here in the United States. And, of course, for all Bills and all Sabres, all sports, all the time, keep it locked right here on WGR. We do have a Sabres game tonight as well, 6 p.m. Steve Fulop pregame as the Sabres host the Senators at 7. But for continued wall-to-wall coverage of the 2024 general election, do tune into our sister station, Buffalo News Talk Leader, 930 WBEN and WBEN on the Odyssey app. They are, of course, going to have you covered all day and likely into the evening as well. Talking to some of our fellow producers here, they're gearing up for a long night going forward. Should be a very, very interesting day all around, both with the country and the NFL as well. Of course, the trade deadline being today. We've had already, though, surprisingly, Josh, three trades come in just this morning. Mm-hmm. It started this morning with Za'Darius Smith going from Cleveland to Detroit in one of the least surprising moves, I would say, so far, outside of like just teams adding wide receivers that we all knew. Detroit loses Aiden Hutchinson for the year. They go and get Za'Darius Smith. He's a much cheaper option than, say, trying to get a Max Crosby or a Myles Garrett, which would have made zero sense. But he's still going to come in, and he's going to give you good sack production. He's going to get to the quarterback, and you're kind of going to be able to keep the train on the tracks. Detroit already looks like a wagon. This keeps it from maybe falling off come playoff time.
This is one of the ones that I wanted the Bills to go after.
I did too. Yeah.
I just thought that he fit what they needed very nicely. It was, you know, hey, he's a veteran player on a low contract, and you're not going to have to heavily rely on him as the season goes on, hopefully. But he'll be there for you now, and he'll also be a reliable backup.
And
but,
to be fair, Detroit gets him, I think, relatively cheap, a 2025 fifth and a 2026 sixth.
And
that's
they also
not bad
get
by any means.
A seventh.
Yeah, which
if that's worth anything to you.
That's normally how those go. Well, it is
right.
A full pick swap plus, like,
right.
We'll throw in the other one for you.
Mm-hmm. But, it is a seventh round pick.
Yeah.
So
that's the thing. It doesn't end up actually really ever mattering all that much. I think this works for Detroit. For the Bills, though, I will say, I kind of backed away from it. Number one, you got Von Miller back, so you're kind of hoping the pass, he continues his production that he had before suspension. And then Rousseau, really over the last like month, has really started to shine in terms
last
of some
game
of his
was
best
a,
games.
Last game was a bit shaky for both of them. Granted, Von
I would
was
say
coming
for
back.
Everybody on the defensive line.
Well, yeah, that's true. The whole defensive line was pretty shaky, but Von and Greg Rousseau specifically, I mean, Von Miller's coming back from a four-week suspension. You kind of like, yes, he wasn't hurt and he was
Someone
fully healthy,
though,
but at the same time, he's not practicing as he would normally, right? Like it's just more of a, you know, I'm going to practice on my own essentially and do what I can, which you can't get the same sort of reps that you can if you're practicing with the team.
Yep.
But at the end of that Dolphins game, Von did start to come alive. He did have some pressures. He almost got a sack, I think. If not,
I know Rousseau did.
Rousseau did.
And that was with the Dolphins, I mean, getting the ball out quick.
Yeah, that was the thing. And then you know the Dolphins will do that. So, like, that's something that the Bills obviously expected. But at the same time, that was probably the quickest I've ever seen them really
the last 2 weeks.
Get the ball
with Tua
out.
Now being back, it's been the last 2 weeks. Because that was noted against Arizona as well. They actually look different because of how quickly they're getting the ball out.
Right. Which, if you can do that effectively, then that's great. Because, again, the Dolphins, I mean, this is our first time being able to talk about it. You know, being Tuesday and everything, we're not going to go fully in on it, but the Dolphins did play that game very well.
It was the perfect game for them.
It was a close game. They kept the Bills in check in terms of the run game, and they were able to eat clock in that sense as well. But they also just kind of used that new quick pass, the revamped quick pass thing to their advantage. And I think that was something that kind of scared me early on in that game. But of course, you know, the Bills are a great team at the second half where they adjust. And that really came out in that game.
Oh,
against
yeah.
the Dolphins.
So, if you're a Dolphins fan, though, you're pretty crushed by that game. You played nearly – that is easily Tua's best game against the Bills in his career.
Mm-hmm.
And you still lost because the kicker that most Bills fans up to that point wanted gone
right.
made a 61-yard field goal. Like, at that point, you just throw
Good
your hands
Tyler
up
Bass,
and go,
by the way.
I don't, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Great for him.
But you throw your hands up and you go, I don't know what we're going to do. Their, right. their defense right. is honestly bad.
Yeah. No, and it's you know, you can see it with that hit Jordan Poyer had on Keon Coleman. I don't think that was a dirty hit. I think that's because Poyer is slowed down and mm-hmm. can't get to where he used to be. So he's going full bore trying to get there, and then, uh-oh, I can't pull out of it, and I did not get there nearly in time.
Yeah, a few years ago, it's just a great play on the ball.
Right.
Now he's
well, yeah.
late, and he's hitting Keon Coleman in the head and now injuring his wrist as well.
Well, and also causing a penalty for his team.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where you see all the players the Bills lost, like Jordan Poyer, like Micah Hyde, like Tre'Davious White, and obviously, Micah Hyde's not playing right now, but with Poyer and White, White's a healthy scratch, and Poyer is constantly making these bad mistakes for his team week in and week out. So, for all the people that were saying, oh, well, the Bills lost all these players, okay, cool.
Well, and I know Albert Breer has been big on that, too, of like talking about the Bills' culture and player development and stuff like that. Many Bills fans, though, for the last 2 years have been talking about the age of some of these guys and the fact that it's like, we've sort of gotten to a point. It was ready for the Bills to transition to this younger core, and that's what they're doing, and it's, for the most part, going well.
Yeah.
Injuries, though, continue to get them, and namely wrist injuries. We know,
which is wild. Like,
yeah.
It's just such a random thing that seemingly everyone that's injured on the Bills right now has a wrist injury. I've never seen something like that.
No. Dewan Smoot, we do know for him, he is going to IR. Don't know if it's season-ending injury, but he is having, or he, I think, has now had surgery on his wrist.
I think they're saying it was kind of the same thing that Dwayne Carter went through.
Yeah.
Maybe not the same exact injury, but the same type of surgery. So that's probably why you see both of them on IR right now. But we're talking about right now, the injuries here. That's why I wanted them to go after a guy like Za'Darius Smith, because all of these injuries we're talking about is on the defensive line. And, I mean, sure, obviously Keon Coleman's not, but the defensive line already had issues this past week.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're also injured. So you don't have some of those players. And it's just this kind of problem where I'm looking at this like, okay, they should probably go out and get somebody today, but I also don't want them to overspend.
I don't want that. Well, I think that you're looking at it, though, too, the prices that are going off for the early trades now.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Khalil Herbert. He goes from the Bears to the Bengals for a seventh.
Right.
Which, you know, that's nothing crazy.
Yeah.
And then the only big trade, I guess, that would be like, but it's a clear misfire, has been the Cowboys go and get Jonathan Mingo, and they give him a fourth to do that,
right.
Which feels insane.
And honestly, it's funny. We were talking about this before the show. Jonathan Mingo, like, it's not that I would want the Bills to go after him, but he is kind of an interesting player.
He was interesting coming out of the draft.
Yeah. But, like, he just hasn't done anything at the NFL level, and I mean, it's probably because he's with Carolina. First of all,
it doesn't help, but he has not been getting open. He's not been a guy that necessarily is ever, like, a perfect example, Adonai Mitchell for the Colts has been somebody that you can look at and go, man, he is getting open a ton. His catchable pass rate is incredibly low. Like, he is being burned by the system he's in.
Mm-hmm.
Mingo has not had that. Mingo just can't even get targets. He's in a way a lot like, I mean, now a few years down the road, but a Sky Moore for Kansas City, where you get to a point he's not getting open. He's not even getting on the field. He's not even getting snaps.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of where Mingo is at this point. And it's only his second year in the NFL.
But I don't really know. Is that even going to get better on the Cowboys? I mean, looking at where he's coming from.
Yeah, they're going to Cooper Rush now.
Are they? Wait, what?
Yeah, Dak Prescott's going on to IR. So, I mean, like, you're going to.
Oh, that's right.
So Mingo's going to start with Cooper Rush.
I completely forgot about it. I was like, what happened to Dak? But. Yeah, and not even that, but more so the wide receiver room around him. I mean, you're taking him from the Panthers, who have basically nothing. They have Adam Thielen. Before they traded Deontay Johnson, they had Adam Thielen, Deontay Johnson, and Xavier Legette.
Oh, yeah.
That's all you have in Carolina. And then you trade away Deontay Johnson, so then all you have is Adam Thielen, who can't stay healthy, who's actually on IR, so it doesn't even matter. Xavier Legette, David Moore and Jalen Coker.
Oh, boy.
And Jonathan Mingo couldn't get involved in that lineup. And now
Steve Palazzolo also brings up a great point here over on the 33rd team. And it was, I know it's not apples to apples, but DeAndre Hopkins went for a conditional fifth. Mingo went for a fourth.
Yeah. But then, like I said, now you look at Dallas where you have CeeDee Lamb, Jalen Tolbert, Jalen Brooks. Like those, I mean, Brandon Cooks is on IR, so I don't know his status on when he might come back, if at all, this season. But you look at what they have in Dallas, those guys that have been there for years and they're also like kind of producing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you bring in a guy that hasn't produced on a team that's really bad and has opportunities, and you put him on a team that's trying to be really good and doesn't have many opportunities. And this is less on Jonathan Mingo and more on the Cowboys for trading a fourth for him. I mean, this is just, what are the Cowboys doing?
Well, I mean, this is Jerry Jones. I don't want to you know, beat a dead horse here, but like he's had a rough like last 18 months.
Yeah,
obviously being in charge of the Cowboys, he has been for decades at this point, especially as GM.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, talking about going all in and then effectively not doing anything in the offseason, getting the oldest running back room in existence that they can't run either. They are CeeDee Lamb and Dak dependent, and their offense isn't even any good.
And now Dak is hurt.
CeeDee Lamb's still producing really well. And then, you know, even with his Mingo trade, he's, you know, half broke it during his radio interview this morning, just saying that they're getting a guy that they've loved since the draft. So I now wouldn't be, just hearing that quote and then seeing what they gave up for Mingo, I wouldn't be surprised if Jerry went in early with the, we'll give you a fourth. And this was done incredibly quickly because he well overpaid. Not looking around at the rest of the league going, you know, even Za'Darius Smith doesn't go for a ton. And we're sitting here as Bills fans. I heard Chris Trapasso on earlier today with Jeremy and Joe. You're seeing the compensation that's going around the league, and you're seeing it going, oh, the Bills have a lot of fifth-round picks and fourth-round picks and sixth-round picks. And that's where, like, I do look at, you know, I would much rather see the Bills add somebody like a defensive tackle, because you're not seeing a good year out of Ed Oliver up to this point.
Right.
It has not been up to his standard, especially set to last year. And I wonder if it's who his partner is next to him. So I'd like to see the Bills add somebody on the defensive line. My dream would be Calais Campbell.
Yes,
for a half-year rental, that would be my dream of adding him. You're not going to keep him long. I think he is like 36, 37, 38. I mean, he's older. But if I'm just going to have him for 9 to 10 games, depending on the playoff run, beautiful. Let's go. That's my dream, and I'm getting him for what, a sixth-round pick?
Maybe.
Probably,
yeah.
Like, okay, giddy up. Let's ride.
Mm-hmm.
I am a little nervous in terms of the injury to Keon Coleman, especially because we're at a point now where we're sitting here. We've had two games where the wide receiver room has been healthy up to this point, and you can't even fully say that because we don't know what's going on with Curtis Samuel.
Yeah, that one's a big question mark for me. And I
don't want to see the Bills add another wide receiver. I like where they're at. I think now that Khalil Shakir is healthy, I think Amari Cooper was held up mainly just to be, we know where we're at in the division. Let's get him 100%. No reason to throw him out there. We'll be fine. Even if we lose this game, we still got a good enough lead. We'll be healthy. We can go on a run here. They end up beating Miami, so it ultimately all works out in the end.
I'm at the point, though, with the wide receiver room where, depending on Keon's outlook, I would love for them to go for another wide receiver, because if Keon's going to be out long term, I don't want to just go back to basically what we had in week one week five.
That's the thing. And yesterday's press conference, or not press conference, but just sit down with the media from Sean McDermott, didn't give me a ton of confidence. Whenever you hear there's more testing, that's never a good sign.
Yeah, and then also what's going on too with Amari Cooper. If Cooper can't get healthy or is going to be a little shaky here, you don't have to add anybody big, but go get, you know, a Darius Slayton, a KJ Osborne, like somebody like that who can just come in and be there and kind of supplement you for a little while your guys get healthy. And then if they do pop off in that offense, then great. You can keep using them. But the problem, the bigger picture is Curtis Samuel has not done what you want him to do as an $8 million a year player.
Oh.
That's been one of the biggest misses so far this offseason, is he hasn't been able to do what the Bills offense expected him to. Partially, it probably could be because of injury, but I don't really think it's all that. I think it plays a factor for sure, but if he's that injured, he wouldn't be playing in games. He was playing on Sunday against the Dolphins. I didn't notice him till the third quarter. I saw the number one jersey, and I was like, oh, Curtis Samuel's in today? Because I didn't see the list of inactives. I just assumed he was out, and I didn't even know he was playing.
I'll be honest.
That invisible.
Joe Brady spoke yesterday with the media too, and he was talking about Curtis Samuel's usage, and I don't know who the reporter was that asked him, so I apologize, but just basically asked him, you know, everyone else seems to be getting touchdowns, kind of except Curtis Samuel, like everyone's getting involved, and maybe this is the pessimist in me, but like listening to Brady talk about how, you know, well, him just being out there, you know, scaring the Dolphins and such. And I'm like, I'm like, then why are no big plays happening? Why did he play 19 snaps? If it's that much of a threat, Mike Schoep brought this up too yesterday. If it's that much of a threat, why isn't he playing most of the game?
Mm-hmm. Well, and because Cooper definitely brings that factor. You saw that in his first game against the Titans.
Yep.
Not the Seahawks game.
You saw it in the Titans where he wasn't doing anything
except
opening up. Titans, he was genuinely doing stuff.
Yeah, right. But in the Seahawks game, you saw it where he wasn't really doing anything, but just him being on the field did cause other things to open up, which I think is part of the – is if you want to look at it 50-50, that's probably half of the reason why they traded for him. And obviously, half of it is because he still has a great ability as an NFL player.
Mm-hmm.
But the other half is he's a decoy almost. He can open up other guys and kind of – just expand your playbook where you have all these plays, but you can't really run it because you don't have the full personnel that you expected.
Yeah.
And that's where Amari Cooper is great. But if he's going to be hurt and if Keon Coleman's going to be hurt, you might need to add someone else because then you're back to Khalil Shakir, Mac Hollins, Curtis Samuel, and guys off the practice squad.
Yeah, Tyrell Shavers. And Shakir's really your only consistent threat.
Right, exactly. And then obviously you still have, you know, guys like Dawson Knox and Dalton Kincaid, but what have they really done this season?
Oh, man, watching last night's game and watching Baker Mayfield without Chris Godwin and
right.
Mike Evans just decide, cool, it's going to be K-Dotten today.
Yeah.
And for them to go toe-to-toe with the Chiefs,
yeah,
a game that I didn't think the Chiefs would like necessarily like put up 40 on them, but I thought the Chiefs would win comfortably because Tampa wouldn't be able to score. And I had an interaction with somebody on Twitter as well, just like, and this is me saying it, I feel somewhat bad, though, of like, I'm sitting here somewhat discouraged watching Kate Otten, a fourth-round pick from 2 years ago, ascend to this, and I my best hope for my first-round pick is to get 50 yards a game. Like that. I now see that as like a benchmark of like, hey, great job today. And it's just – it's incredibly frustrating. This weekend there were some low passes to him that were not really his fault. It would have been an amazing catch if he brought him in.
Mm-hmm.
But to see him just not be a main focal part of the offense, something I really thought in the offseason – was going to be true, end up being 100% right on Shakir. I mean, 100% wrong so far in Kincaid. He has not been the threat I thought he was going to be, even in the end zone. He's not even a guy that's kind of poaching touchdowns or what have you, like Dawson Knox did a few years ago when he was just a big play guy, and that was kind of about it. He wasn't really a volume tight end. Kincaid hasn't been that. I will tell you, though, just personally for me, I'm not really into the wide receiver market. I do think Cooper is fine. I think they were being more conservative with him. He was limited all week last week. I'd be more worried if he was out the entire week, questionable, and then was ruled out. He was limited. He was able to practice. I think they were being more conservative with him. You have Cooper. You have Shakir. I think he'll be fine. Yeah, you're going to have to sprinkle in Mac Hollins, but James Cook and Ray Davis have shown out to be very good in the passing game.
Ray Davis.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's been a phenomenal pickup for the Bills.
He has been awesome. And that's the thing, too. When we get to talking about wide receivers, you kind of forget about certain aspects of the offense.
The quote-unquote playmakers outside
of
wide receivers.
Right, and Ray Davis, is it fair to say that he has been a playmaker for the past 4 weeks?
100%.
Like, I think he has been a big part of that offense for the last four games for
really,
the Bills.
Really, since Cook had since the Jets game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you look at Ray Davis and what he can do for your team, it's an element the Bills have not had on this team in a very long time. And I think that that's important to this offense, far more important than it is to have, you know, two tight ends that can catch the ball consistently. Mm-hmm. Yes, I want Kincaid to be involved, but I think that Ray Davis doing what he's doing, it just adds this other element the Bills haven't had. And it creates another problem for the defense on top of Allen can throw the ball really well and, Allen can rush as well. So if you have that three-headed monster and then you also occasionally throw in those Kincaid catches for big plays or the Knox red zone threat, whatever, that's where you kind of get this offense rolling. But right now you're down to two of those things. You're down to Allen being able to run and you're down to the running backs being great so far this season.
You are, but I'm not nearly as worried. My biggest worries has been execution in the early parts of the game. I mean, they were driving on Miami, even in the first half on Sunday. Mm-hmm. It was a terrible blocking attempt by Kincaid that ultimately ruins what would have been a good deep shot to Keon Coleman. He has to throw it early. And I mean, Keon's throwing up the arm the whole thing, but Allen has to throw it early. Then, of course, you know, Keon again, you go down to the red zone. If you drove all the way down, it's an easy pitch and catch. He doesn't catch it. It's an interception. I mean, I was not as discouraged by the first half as I have been in other weeks. For me, it is much more the defense. Namely, defensive line run setting, edge run setting, and stuff like that. It was a really, really bad game by the Bills in terms of the rushing attack. And it's alarming because it's another bad game against the rushing attack. Baltimore being the first, and now you do have Jonathan Taylor next week, which could be interesting. I mean, it's Joe Flacco. The offense looks completely useless for Indianapolis.
Aside from Jonathan Taylor, potentially.
And Taylor, I think, for a lot of Bills fans, lives in memory of a guy that absolutely torched you. For a long time, we sat there and go, yeah, the only blowout was Jonathan Taylor from like 4 years ago. And he's still there, and he's still very good. Not necessarily he is that still, and I'm not saying that the Bills aren't, that is going to happen to them, but that's if they were to add anything, and I don't think they will. I heard that Brandon Bean clip earlier today. I think, who was that with Pat McAfee?
Ross Tucker.
Ross Tucker. And yeah, I think it's fair to take that at face value. Like, unless they can go get a Calais Campbell, which, it's a division rival as well, so I don't really know.
Yeah, well.
Unless they're able to get him for very cheap, I just don't see them making a move. I think they really did make the Cooper move for the sheer fact of Curtis Samuel's not hitting and Matt Collins, we're targeting him too much. The offense is not in any sort of sync. That's why they went and added him. And to be fair, I think the Khalil Shakir injury highlighted that more. I don't know if the Bills were going to be willing to make that move at the time unless they did see what the offense looked like when Khalil Shakir for the second half was injured against Baltimore and then completely out against Houston. You saw very quickly how what could be and has been a very efficient passing game so far this year immediately dipped when he was not in the lineup. I mean, he already has more catches than he has in any other year of his career up to this point. I mean, he's going to be a guy that is maybe going to get to like 90 catches after missing a game and for half of one basically being a non-factor. I'm very, very excited for him. And I think it's a big thing too. I don't want to take touches away from key playmakers just to potentially add somebody. Again, it depends on Keon Coleman's injury. I'm still holding out hope there. But, I mean, they'll kind of know. I think they would sort of know if, like, hey, we maybe want to make a move for the rest of the year because we won't have Keon. I think that might actually be a telling sign if they add a wide receiver today.
Yeah, depending on who it is.
And I don't think they are.
Because there's going to be a level to that where if you go out and just for funsies, let's say they add T. Higgins.
Just like, for funsies.
Like, that would be cool. That'd be great. But it would also be like, hey, wait a second.
That probably means you're out Keon.
What's
for the year.
Happening to Keon? Yeah.
And right. I think that's the thing is, for me personally, that would be where my mind would go. Is if they were to add a receiver today, I would assume Keon is out long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, I mean, that I think wouldn't. I would obviously much rather have a player come back from injury than have to go out and add a player because, one, mm-hmm. you're giving up assets then, and two, even if it is a player like T. Higgins, you're losing a year of development from Keon, which. Sure, you're gaining half a season from T. Higgins, but you're just going to lose him in the offseason.
Like, yeah, and he is not somebody I'd want to pay long term.
No, just no, flat not at all. Know. It's just, it doesn't. He's going to get a big contract, but he's not a wide receiver one, and he's mm-hmm. going to want wide receiver one money.
Yep.
And that's, you know, that's that. But again, if they add a wide receiver that's, you know, further down the depth chart, like a KJ Osborne,
that'd be nice.
That'd be kind of nice. I'd be interested to see something like that, but it still kind of gives you this worry in the back of your mind of why add that. If this other guy's going to be coming mm-hmm. back.
803-0550, the number to call. What do you want to see the Bills do on this NFL trade deadline day? We've also got a Sabres game tonight as they're hosting the Ottawa Senators. And we also had a Monday Night Football game last night that severely frustrated me to no end, namely Tampa Bay head coach Todd Bowles. We'll jump into that after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Back to pass, delayed blitz coming. Allen looking deep down the left sideline for Coleman, trying to come back to the football, and he's nailed. Defenseless receiver, and the flag flies. Jordan Poyer is going to get called for hitting a defenseless receiver helmet to helmet. It's a huge penalty.
Chris Brown on the call there. It was a game-changing penalty. It ultimately did help put Buffalo in position to kick that 61-yard game-winning field goal. But now, because of that hit, it has got a lot of Bills fans holding their breath a little bit on the health of Keon Coleman. Hope to learn more tomorrow. Bills are off today, although they'll likely get more information today. But with how lock and key they keep a lot of their secrets, I can't imagine we'll get a report or what have you on Coleman's health. But we will see. Talking NFL trade deadline today, as the deadline is later on this afternoon. We've already got three trades for today. The Bills got active a few weeks ago. A number of teams have as well to add wide receivers. And let's now get connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We go to the phones. Adam is on the line. Adam, how are we doing on this fine day?
Not too bad, guys. Hope you're enjoying the weather today at some point in time.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, maybe go driving range, knock around 9, something like that.
Oh, man. Now I might have to.
Just in terms of the trade deadline here, I'm going into this very cautiously because, you know, you kind of look at the Bills' history of acquiring offensive players during the season, and Nyheim Hines comes to mind with this one. You know, I remember when we got him, you know, we just kept on waiting for him to be used mm-hmm. as a weapon, and it never came. And I feel like McDermott has a very staunch history of, you know, being very defensive of the guys that are quote-unquote already here. You know, it's like we get Cooper, and it's like, you know, he's asked about Cooper, and it's like, okay, you know, he's a good player, but let's not forget about the guys that we already have here. Well, it's like if the guys that were already here were producing and doing what was needed to be done, you wouldn't have had to go out and get Cooper. So I go to this trade deadline, you know, really hesitant on being excited about any type of receiver help, any tight end help, you know, even anything on the offensive line if they're looking for depth pieces. You know, and I see us more or less looking to add in the defensive backfield because, you know, again, you kind of look at revisionist history. Think of Rasul Douglas. You know, mm-hmm. he came in and he's able to adapt right away. And why? Because I think that's McDermott's strength. So just any defensive backs out there that you guys think would be a good target for us, I'd be interested in to hear what you guys have. And also I wanted to just address the slow starts, man. It's repetitive. It is consistent. And I can't for the life of me understand why we come out every single game so flat. It's run, pass, and punt. And if I'm another defensive coordinator out there, you know, it's not hard to predict what we're looking to do. And I don't understand why we can't just open up a game, you know, just play action. I don't care who it is. Mac Hollins, run down the field as fast as you can. Josh is going to launch it as far as he possibly can. And maybe that'll get the opposing team to back up a little bit, and that'll help open up the offense. If you look at the passing chart for Josh Allen this past week, I don't think he had one throw, one attempt of over 20 yards. And I understand, you know, we don't have the explosiveness anymore that we're looking for in terms of the long playability. And they're all about, you know, run after catch and give these guys an opportunity to get the ball as quickly as they can and get the run after catch going. Just in terms of that, just would like to hear your guys' opinion about what we can do to maybe start off a little bit faster. So I'll hang up and listen and go enjoy the day.
Adam, man, thanks for the call. And brother, you're speaking a lot of my language there with the slow starts. It's taken years off my life. And you know what, though? A lot of it, what's frustrating is exactly that. It seems like, you know, going in, they're going to run on first down, they're going to run on second down, and then they're going to force a pass on third down. And because they've had difficulties getting open when you're all of a sudden 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, and trying to throw the ball, mm-hmm. it's difficult, even with Josh Allen at quarterback. The Mac Collins thing, though, I don't think it was the first drive. He did throw to him deep against Houston.
Yeah.
And it just didn't go anywhere. I think a lot of it, though, too, is I wonder if the Bills are a team that just is, I personally think, to their own detriment, but in a way I can understand where this works. They're letting the game kind of tell the story early rather than kind of aggressively getting down, you know, pen to paper, and they're going to write the story. Mm. They're kind of letting the other team sort of dictate, what kind of game are you going to get out of us?
Which, if you think about it, it kind of plays into the way they are as a team, because they always, we've talked about it, they always adjust well in the second half. If they just let the other team show them what they're going to want to do the whole game, that's how you can easily adjust in the second half. But at the same time, you can't do that against every team.
No, because you can do that against the bad ones. You did it against Baltimore. It was basically a blowout.
You kind of did it against Houston, too.
Yeah, you kind of were bad the whole game against Houston.
Well,
your defense got much better in the second half, yes. But you could argue that was Nico Collins going on or what have you.
Right. But overall, though, it does work in some scenarios, but mm-hmm. when you're playing the better teams, it usually doesn't work. You're playing the Baltimores, the Kansas Cities, the Detroit, mm-hmm. like that's not going to work. And
I mean, you do anything wrong against Detroit, they're going to kill you.
Yeah. You don't. You do everything perfect against Detroit, and they might kill you. Like,
they got the mandate of heaven. The amount of like pick sixes, kick return touchdowns, lack of yards, but blowing teams out. Right. I'm telling you. Mandate of heaven right there.
Color did bring up there, though.
I thought it was Pittsburgh. It's not. It's Detroit.
Going for a defensive back of some kind, somebody in the secondary. I'm not necessarily looking at cornerbacks, but also
safety. Safety is the one I definitely think about. I will say, though, on the one point in terms of McDermott kind of always defending his guys, I get it. I don't think McDermott means anything by it of like he doesn't trust the new guys coming in. I mean, Rasul Douglas has been open about the fact. I mean, he went in mainly due to injuries.
Right.
And he's been open about the fact that it was sort of the veterans dictating him where he's going to go and telling him, hey, just jump the pass if you got a shot. So, and that helped him great, but like he's been open about the fact that like this was when he was actually learning the Bills playbook, not when he got traded for, and even the Bills were open about loving that they got Cooper in now because he could learn the playbook, and as the season went on, he could be effective. In terms of him defending his guys, look, I think it's him being – funny enough, it's election day. He's being a politician. The guys know it's an indictment enough that they're going to trade for a wide receiver. There's no reason then to go to the media and go, yeah – we are not getting open enough. These guys are rough.
Right.
It's an indictment enough that, we do have to go at somebody because I am not getting open enough, or I'm not catching the ball, or what have you. It's enough. There's no reason to then go out and bash him again. It's kind of like Chicago with that cornerback where, you know, he came out, he publicly apologized.
Tyree Stevenson. Yeah.
The team came after him, and then what do they do? Well, now we're going to demote you in practice and stuff like that. And they kept piling on.
Right.
And this is the thing, too, and I've taken some calls and I've heard and even taken them on the station as well. This is not a league where you learn life lessons. These guys are many of them into their mid-20s going into their 30s. So whenever I hear, you know, just for the quarterback, Allen throws three interceptions, bench him so he learns his lesson. Okay, cool. He's never playing for you again. Like, you can't treat them like children. It would be like that if McDermott went out, these guys just aren't getting open, just bashing them
left, right, and center. There's times you can do that with rookies, and we've seen that happen.
Sure.
I mean, look at James Cook in his first game. He had a fumble on his first touch and didn't play for the rest of the game.
Sure, but you think Mac Hollins, Curtis Samuel, even Khalil Shakir are going to take it well when all of a sudden... Yeah, exactly.
And there's levels to that. Like, you could certainly discipline players, but you can't just discipline them by benching them and by berating them in the media and things like that. But back to the point about, you know, trading for someone in the secondary. A name that was, if I remember correctly, linked to the Bills in free agency this past offseason, who ended up signing back with his team on a one-year deal. A young safety.
Mm-hmm.
Julian Blackmon, Indianapolis Colts.
Okay.
He's on a... Whenever I look at trades, I always look at guys on the end of their deals. Because that's usually the only players that are ever traded in the NFL. And I'm looking at age too, because Julian Blackman's only 26. He's on the end of a one-year deal. The Colts didn't commit to him long term, not really sure why, but at the same time, the Colts are kind of in a weird spot right now. That's also where you could get this. Is the Colts are in a weird spot right now, you could probably offer them some draft capital, and to be fair, he would be probably a pretty tough get, I think, because he is one of the better safeties in the league at the moment in terms of on the rise as a younger player. But I mean, just last year he had 4 interceptions.
Yep.
That's pretty good. And
I say do it just for the intel this weekend.
No.
There we go.
So what do you guys run in defense? Okay, cool. See ya. We're cutting you.
Cut him. Make a statement.
I don't know. What do you think? I think that he's a player that they've had issues with the secondary. They've had issues with safety mainly.
Yeah. I'll give you my thought after this next call, Mark, because I think Mark wants to talk about another safety. Mark, you're on the line. How are we doing today, man?
Hey, guys. Happy election day. Mm-hmm. The whole Jordan Poyer thing kind of fired me up about the safety position. And to that caller's point of who do we think, I think a guy like Buda Baker would fit in perfect here. And I thought Jordan Poyer looked slow ever since the Bengals playoff game. I thought he looked just slow, like he lost a step. And I thought, you know, it was an illegal hit, and I don't like anybody defending him. I have no love lost for these dudes that leave the team. I don't know if I'm just fired up today, but Buda Baker would be my answer. And I love the idea of getting bigger and better on the interior. I don't think you're getting enough out of Von Miller and Ed Oliver. To where, you know, they could affect Mahomes or get after Lamar. But I'm going to have to listen to you guys. Have a good day.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, happy election day as well. And I, man, watching Tampa Bay's defensive line, namely Vita Vea, it's so good. But the Bills are kind of getting got by what was sort of a modern run for NFL defenses, which is getting smaller and faster. And that includes on the defensive line. And now you're having some teams that are of course, you know, attacking that, getting bigger. It's gonna be kind of an ebb and flow to it.
Yeah.
Safety, though, I will tell you, number one, Buda Baker, I think you're going to have a near impossible chance to get him for the sheer fact of Arizona's good.
Yeah, if Arizona was bad, he'd be
if Arizona had
totally
two wins,
yeah.
He's 100% on the table.
Mm-hmm.
They right now are in the lead of the NFC West. I personally think Buda Baker is literally off the table.
Yeah.
And I think Arizona's even made a trade to grab somebody. So, like, they are maybe even slight buyers, but they're definitely not sellers and certainly not maybe their best player on defense, arguably one of the faces of their franchise.
They're a conservative buyer.
Yeah. I think he'd be a wonderful addition to the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
But even if they were a bad team, I think it would also take, like, a second, even a first-round pick to get him.
Not to mention the fact of salary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he makes too much money for the Bills' cap right now. That's also why I was looking at a guy like Julian Blackman.
Yeah,
because he only makes 3.7 this year. Again, it's a one-year deal, so you would have to sign him at the end of the year, mm-hmm. but he's young enough where I think it'd be worth it to give him that cap space you're about to receive, because the Bills are going to have a lot of cap space this offseason.
I also wonder, too, if they want to add him just because, you know, the Mike Edwards experiment didn't work.
Yeah, and they were also linked to him mm-hmm. last offseason. Mm-hmm. I remember I was really excited for the Bills to potentially go after him because, again, he is a good young player. He has four interceptions last year. He's got one this year. He has a sack this year. Like, he has been good.
Yeah.
But the problem is the Colts aren't, they're not great, but they're not bad either because the AFC South is terrible.
I was going to say, yeah, they're 4-5. I'd be very surprised if they traded anybody either as sellers because, look, they ultimately made the move to Joe Flacco because they think they can make the playoffs now. That's why they're benching Anthony Richardson.
Right.
I think it's an amalgamation of a few things, but I think that's a major one of them thinking, no, we can make it now. Let's not wait. I think it's a terrible decision. But
right.
Again, I think it's also a mixture of a lot.
But because of the fact that the AFC South is terrible, maybe they can... Aside from Houston, maybe they can squeak into a wild card spot by winning their other divisional games. But at the same time,
I think it's fool's hope. But
yeah, exactly. But that's why if you're the Bills, if you go out and offer them your extra second,
mm-hmm.
because even if they were bad, I think that's what would take to get a guy like Blackman.
I have no appetite giving up more than a day three pick
mm-hmm.
because you're seeing these other trades going around. It's all day three picks.
Right. But to be fair, they're day three players.
Well, they don't necessarily have to be. I mean, you're getting a half-year rental for most of these guys.
Yes, but they're day three rentals. If Blackman was a rental player for the Bills, if mm-hmm. the Bills couldn't sign him next offseason and they traded for him, he'd be a rental player but an expensive one.
Yeah, he would be. For me, though, you just spent a second-round pick on Cole Bishop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Taylor Rapp is himself also a young safety.
I forgot about Cole Bishop, actually.
I guess I'm at a point, and maybe it could potentially be bad on me. I want to see those guys fail and then succeed first before I'm in within nine games going to decide, never mind, screw this, we're changing, you know, trajectory. I think, honestly, the Bills' offense, namely their passing attack, showed, no, you needed to do that. You needed to make a change there. I don't know if the safeties have done that yet. I am more concerned about adding a bigger body at defensive tackle. And again, mm-hmm. ultimately, don't even think the Bills will make a move. But if it were to be a move, would I hate a safety addition? Probably not.
Yeah.
Would I prefer a defensive tackle or an edge setting, you know, or a run-stopping edge player? I far prefer that. And that would make me, I'd say, a little bit happier. I said it after the game on Sunday. Go add a run stuffer and let's ride.
Yeah. I mean,
that's where I'm at.
That's fair. I look at, you know, the issues the Bills have had in the secondary. It's not Christian Benford. It's not Taron Johnson. It's not Rasul Douglas. It's not even their backups. It's their safeties. And you know, Damar Hamlin and Taylor Rapp have come up in big moments. I mean, Hamlin had a fumble. Did he force the fumble or did he have the fumble recovery?
Fumble recovery, I believe.
No, he picked up the one that was ruled not.
That's right. That's
was
right.
Ruled
yes.
down. But I think he was part of the guys that forced the fumble that Kyer Elam did recover earlier mm-hmm. in the game. But still, I mean, so he has had his moments, and Taylor Rapp has been a big, hard-hitting safety at times. But I just think that that's one of the areas where if you add another key piece to that, even though your defensive line has been shaky, I think they can return to form a lot quicker than these safeties might be able to show you more.
Yeah. 803-0550 is the number to call. What do you want to see the Bills do on this NFL trade deadline day? Also, college basketball got underway yesterday, and locally, a very good night for college hoops. We'll talk a little bit about that after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
Bryson finds Batchelor on the right, who drives on the hoop. Left corner, done for a three, and the win, and he got it! He got it! He got it! 83-82 Buffalo, timeout UB. Tyson Dunn from the left corner hit a go-ahead three-pointer. 1.3 seconds on the clock.
Well, would you look at that? College basketball got going in bulk yesterday. There was like over 130 games yesterday just on the men's side. I don't even know about the women's, but both UB programs were in action last night. UB women took down Troy yesterday earlier on in the evening, and then you heard there UB men taking down Old Dominion. Went on the road, 10.5-point underdog, Josh. Go out and win 83-82. You heard there, Tyson Dunn, game-winning three-pointer. This is a team that won four games last year. I mean, you know, in a really bad spot, trying to rebuild post Nate Oates and missing on some head coaching hirings. They won four games last year. To get this win in that fashion on the road, you know, not necessarily a neutral site, but you're at Old Dominion's campus. Great for them. And Niagara also. In action tonight, last night, Purple Eagles got a big win as well over Houghton as they begin their year. 100-65, seven different Purple Eagles scored in double digits, and they'll actually be on the road. They're going to take on Michigan State on Thursday. That's going to be an 8 p.m. tip-off. And then UB Men, I think next week, are at Notre Dame as well. So some big power four teams for UB and Niagara to take on. Should be a lot of fun. Love college basketball being back. Big fan. Big fan, Joshua.
Wake me up when it's March.
Is that a surprise when you say big fan? We know you are.
I know, yeah. Like everybody knows. Like it's like my one like deeply uncomfortable trait is like I watch college basketball in November. I also watched it like 11:30 last night. I watched Gonzaga kill Baylor. It's a top 10 matchup, Josh. You weren't there?
No.
Come on.
I was asleep.
Top 10 matchup. I'm watching Gonzaga run Baylor off the court. It was beautiful. Got some trade updates, or at least some inquiries. Jeremy Fowler tweeting that the Titans have received inquiries on defensive line players, including Adrian Key and Sebastian Joseph Day. I'm a big fan of him. I know Aaron Quinn over Cover One. He was tweeting about him. I'm all for it. That is another guy that I think, and that's a team, Titans, who are clearly shelving off talent. They'll also never know peace for letting Derrick Henry go to the Ravens and DeAndre Hopkins go to the Chiefs. So they could do the Bills a solid and give them Sebastian Joseph Day for a seventh round pick. That would be kind. He is somebody, though, I'd be a huge fan if the Bills could go get him, because he's a run star. He's a big defensive tackle, 6'4", 310 pounds. And for an overall not great Tennessee Titans team, he's helped them have a pretty darn good defense. At least up until like the Bills games, where they sort of kind of fell off a cliff. Bills kind of ran them out of the building, and Detroit did as well. Although they did get a win over New England this past weekend. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. 803-0550 is the number to call if you want to get on some of this NFL trade deadline talk. The Sabres also have a game tonight. They're hosting the Ottawa Senators. 6 p.m. Steve Foldedahl pregame show will get going here on WGR for a 7 p.m. puck drop. And you're listening to WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody. Hour number two rolls along here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is a beautiful day looking outside here at our Amherst studio. We've got the leaves changing colors. Like it's that nice bit of fall here. I mean, it's late for us in Buffalo here, Josh, but you got that nice little bit of fall. The leaves are changing, the whole thing. And then it's what, going to be like 70 today? I'm in a hoodie and jeans, and I feel like it's going to be too warm for me.
Yeah, I wore jeans and like a light quarter zip this morning, and I walked out the door, and I'm like, this was a mistake.
Yeah, the quarter zip not needed, which is surprising.
Yeah, so I love it.
I had the same mistake. Mm-hmm. I wore jeans and a golf hoodie, and I was like, I should have worn shorts as soon as I walked out of the door. But it was too late, so I was just like, yeah.
But look I get us. To go home look before at us being all of brainwashed by the weather.
That's the key. I get to go home first and change into shorts.
That's right. Well, that's my thing. I change for the weather I'm going to leave work for.
That's fair, because it might actually be kind of colder.
Well, I mean, the sun now goes down at, 2:30.
Yeah.
I'm being mean, but, it goes down early.
No, you're not wrong.
I can see the sun doing the curve at that point.
Yeah, like the sun is already at its peak, I think.
But so when I leave it, depending on the day, 7 or 8, it's dark.
Yeah.
And it could be cold. But, yeah, so I always dress for that. Zach Jones, Josh Mitt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. It is trade deadline day. Bills got in on that earlier, a few weeks ago, when they added Amari Cooper. Today we've had a few trades, but it's slowed down quite a bit. The last trade was made about an hour ago when the Cowboys, in my personal opinion, overpaid for wide receiver Jonathan Mingo from the Carolina Panthers, sending them a fourth-round pick, which feels incredibly weird when you remember DeAndre Hopkins was traded for a conditional fifth. But, to each their own. Good job, Jerry. I don't know. At some point, I feel like Steven should step in and go, Dad, I think it's time. But that's just me.
Hey, I think a lot of Cowboys fans would agree with you. I mean, it's just, it's funny at this point. I'll sit and laugh. It's great.
That's the worst part for me, Josh. I hate bad football. I really do.
Cowboys bad football, though, is comedy.
See, it kind of is for me. I know you want to get to something here because the New Orleans Saints also bad football.
Good.
We'll get to there in a second.
You're
but
good.
For me, I have to get this point out from last night's game. And even for the Cowboys, I like it to a certain extent. I want good games, though. Mm-hmm. I want them to lose, but I want good games. I want to feel like the game is moving forward.
Lose in heartbreaking fashion.
Watching the two games, and I tweeted this last night, the two games I sat with the most this weekend was obviously Bills-Dolphins, and then last night's game, Tampa Bay and Kansas City. And both those games, I watched conservative coaching absolutely kill their teams. Watching Mike McDaniel multiple times not go for fourth downs and kick field goals against a Bills team that you've seen, due to you and other teams this year, that in the second half, they explode. And specifically with the Dolphins, they can start killing you at any moment, if not the entire game. So kicking field goals is a non-solution. It only hurts you. It is effectively a turnover. The Bills seeing 3 points go on the board instead of them going for fourth is a huge win, even if they won't admit it themselves. And watching that, just incredibly frustrating. And then, to be fair, and I heard Chris Brown say this on the broadcast, and I had to look it up because I was genuinely stunned, they're the worst fourth down team in the NFL. By quite a bit. I think their success rating is like below 20%. I think it's like 18.5. How, with all that speed and the offensive mind of Mike McDaniel, are you that bad on fourth down in the year of our Lord 2024 in the NFL? That is insanity.
Did we all jump the gun on Mike McDaniel a little bit? I mean, I think he still has that offensive mindset.
He has failed multiple tests in a row.
Yeah, he just kind of falls short a lot more than you really want him to at this stage in the game.
It's not even the falling short. I think the first big test he failed in terms of being the offensive wizard mind, whatever you want to call it. And we brought this up. We brought it up last week talking about Miami. Bringing in a backup quarterback and having your offense move to a somewhat similar level. You see Kevin O'Connell's able to do it, and I mean, he's kind of doing it now with Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold has kind of shown you since his breakout to start this year, he's still Sam Darnold. You're not going to give him this amazing – I think teams will, but you shouldn't give him this amazing contract to get it done. Matt LaFleur. Jordan Love has gotten hurt a lot this year, and they keep going to Malik Willis, and it keeps working.
Yeah.
I mean, they lost to Detroit, but they keep winning games.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen other teams have to go to backup quarterbacks, and they're okay. Are they their perfect self? Absolutely not, but they're okay. Miami was unplayable.
Yeah, we're about to find out, too, if Dallas is going to do that. I mean, Cooper Rush
probably
is
not.
Remember the last time Cooper Rush came in? It wasn't that bad.
Stud. And then last night's game, Todd Bowles. You
what are
on
you
the
doing?
Road. You are on the road. You are playing a significantly better team than yourself, and you're playing them well.
Mm-hmm.
You are moving the ball on offense without Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Baker Mayfield is playing a great game. Cade Otton is emerging as a star at the position over the last month. And you don't go for two after you score with 27 seconds left because of the wet conditions. Let's not forget either the calling the timeout to not take any more time off the clock when you're on the 2-yard line.
It's just
unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I'm not a Tampa Bay fan. I'm not even necessarily, I like Baker Mayfield. I like watching him do well because I think he got burned bad by Cleveland. But watching that, come on. And this is where, and I said this last night too, the amount of bad coaching in the NFL is astounding. And I know we all sit with McDermott probably too long. I mean, it's the nature of the beast. When it's your favorite team, you probably pay attention to your own team too much. You start picking out all the warts on your favorite sports franchises because that's the team you love, and I get it. But outside of like a few bad games where he clearly shelled up a little bit, he's been great at going on fourth down. He's a defensive guy. The Bills are a team you never really are worried that are, and if they don't, you're stunned by it. They now routinely will go for fourth and ones, fourth and twos. Is it because Josh Allen's their quarterback? Sure. If you got a weapon,
yeah, but
use them.
That's something new this year, too. I mean, that has not been the Bills of years past, which I love to see. Because it's not only that it's working, but it shows that you're aggressive. It shows that you're ready to go out there and just take control of the game.
Do you mean going for fourth downs or using Josh as a weapon?
Well, both. But going for fourth downs more importantly.
No, I mean, fourth downs, since McDermott's gotten here, they've been aggressive.
There's times, though, where...
He's shelled up. I'm not saying he's not, but he has never been somebody that is afraid to go for a fourth down.
Maybe it's just recency bias, but I'm thinking back to like the Philly game last year.
No, and that's what I mean.
That's the tough part.
He has had moments where he has shelled up.
You don't think about the fourth down tries because they do happen at a decent amount, but you think about the ones that don't work, or you think about the ones where why it doesn't go for it.
100%.
And I think that is like still part of. Up to this point has been a problem, but this year has not really been an issue.
But man, that game frustrated the hell out of me. It really did, watching Tampa just go right down the field and then the timeout and then kicking the extra point. And I'm like, you left them 26 seconds and two timeouts. They just need a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get it. For Bills fans, that scar tissue is never going to go away. But come on. That is ridiculous. And then again, the overtime thing, you are hoping and praying you win a coin flip.
Yeah,
that is insane.
I'm watching right now Baker's reaction to the coin toss. He just looks up to the sky. Just, oh,
you know,
like, there it is.
You know,
yeah,
it is insane.
It's
and the constant
so frustrating.
It always feels like coaches are terrified they actually will lose their job the next day. That some of the callers that do call into post game shows will actually be right, and a coach is just randomly fired because of one bad decision.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're fired for a number of things. Dennis Allen, you can't lose seven straight and then lose to Carolina being set. You can't. That's why you get fired, not because a one bad decision against a team that is clearly better than you and you had them on the ropes. But that will look poorly on you later.
Right. It does add to the problem. It's not just going to go away.
Oh, it frustrated me. Oh, it made me so, so mad that those were the two games I was sitting with. And I'm just like, what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And it more frustrated me because one's considered, or I think you're right, he is losing his luster, is Mike McDaniel, this offensive genius. And the other guy's Todd Bowles, a defensive guy. But they're both, to me, making a very similar mistake. And it's just... Again, we don't, for the most part, have to worry about the Bills with that. They are aggressive on fourth downs. They punish teams for making it fourth and one. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, right. It's one of the things where defensively the Bills have handled that problem. Like, they established the fact of, hey, if you go for it on fourth, you're probably not going to get it. So that's what makes these teams go into just, oh, okay, I'm just going to kick the field goal or I'm going to punt it away.
So bad. And for me, it's more of an indictment on McDaniel that they're the worst fourth down team in terms of percentage of success rate. It's just so bad. But another terrible team has, of course, been the Saints. And you've got an interesting thing that you've wanted to talk about here.
So we have some betting odds for the next Saints head coach. Nick Veronica from Channel 4 tweeted this out a little while ago. So there's some interesting names on this list. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Peyton Manning is listed on here at 100-1.
We are so back.
At the very bottom.
So back.
He is tied with odds with Brian Kelly, both at 100-1 to coach the Saints. Right above them at 50-1, Pete Carroll.
Why is Brian Kelly on the list?
Right. Right.
Let's not act like Louisiana likes him. They tolerate him.
Right. Yeah. You also have Pete Carroll on here. You have Lincoln Riley, Nick Saban, Matt Nagy, Deion Sanders. Obviously, Cliff Kingsbury, there right now is the offensive coordinator. Or no, I'm sorry, that's not him. Clint Kubiak is there. Same type of name. Sorry about that. Cliff Kingsbury, though, making his triumphant return to the NFL with the Saints. That'd be hilarious. But no, the interesting one is the top two.
The interesting? You mentioned Peyton Manning first!
Yeah, I know. But the interesting one is who's not number one and who is. Not number one is Ben Johnson. He's at 4-1 odds at number two.
Because he's not going to take the job.
Well,
they're going to offer it to him 100%. He's going to hang up the phone. He might even spit on his phone as a sign of disrespect.
At number one, we have Joe Brady, Bills offensive coordinator, at 3-1 odds to become the Saints' next head coach. obviously would happen in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
That would be interesting.
That might be a serious possibility for the sheer fact. I don't think Joe Brady, they're running a successful offense. I don't think he's done himself a ton of favors, though,
mm-hmm.
in terms of being like, what we all sort of think will happen with Bills offense coordinators is if they succeed, they're just going to walk into a head coaching opportunity.
Right, yeah.
Obviously, Ken Dorsey got fired, and now Joe Brady, I think, it's been a real mixed bag.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, for him, could be something of where I want to get a head coaching job, and they're offering it.
How is Belichick not on that? Or
he is. He is. 14-1.
Oh, he's a little lower. Okay.
Yeah. Brian Flores is also on there, too. Interesting.
Yeah, no, I get that. The Minnesota defense has mm-hmm. been spectacular. I told
Brian Flores
that.
Below Bill Belichick.
Okay. Well, no, I think because a lot of people just assume Bill Belichick is desperate to get back in the league,
mm-hmm.
and so he'll do it.
There are just some of the names, though, I'd listed off. But
the lack of talent.
Yeah.
I think it's an ugly job to get. I feel like you are going to be sort of, you know, the last guy that gets a chair in musical chairs. You're like, mm-hmm. I guess I'm the Saints head coach. I guess I got a Frankenstein monster this.
Let's say there are other teams next offseason that want to offer Joe Brady a head mm-hmm. coaching position. This is probably the last one he takes. Same with Ben Johnson. Same with a lot of guys on this list. Guys that would take this, probably someone on here, Mike Vrabel. I think he would take this job. Just because of the fact of trying to get somewhere.
Vrabel would fit like a glove for the sheer fact that they would just be like, don't even worry about the cap. Whoever, we'll figure out the cap. You just build a culture.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot for the life of me figure out why Tennessee got rid of him.
Would Belichick take this job?
I feel like Belichick would take any job that gives him a GM role.
Ooh.
I don't think the Saints would do that, though. No, because I think they're going to keep Loomis.
Mm-hmm.
But... I would not be surprised if Belichick took that. If it were to just full control, which wouldn't be that surprising. I mean, they are in a bad spot. That is a team that has refused to acknowledge that even retools are a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are in one of the worst. I fully believe it is the worst head coaching opening, and that includes the Jets.
Yeah.
Because they are just in the worst financial spot, and there's really no talent. Even your young wide receiver in Chris Olave that you can maybe build around, I just don't know about the longevity of his career with how many concussions he keeps piling. And I feel for him, man.
That
hit against Carolina, I mean, my heart sank. Because he keeps picking up injuries. I just don't know about the longevity of his career. It's the worst head coaching opening. I mean, by quite a stretch. And then even this year, you're maybe getting a high pick on a bad quarterback class. So it's not even like you're sitting here going, oh, but at least we're going to, you know, for argument's sake, we're going to get Arch Manning.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Right.
No, you're going to get probably like Quinn Ewers, and you're going to be sitting there going, let's take an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman or what have you, mm-hmm. and then hope to be bad next year. I just don't know if the Saints, because they've proven they really don't, I don't know if the Saints have the stomach to tear it down, be bad for 2 or 3 years, and then rise up again. Even though you're in a division, it's perfectly set up for that. It is perfectly set up for that. Carolina can't get out of its own way. Good for them. They won a game. They're still terrible. Tampa Bay is sort of built for the short term now with Baker Mayfield and Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. It's sort of a short-term build. And honestly, so is Atlanta with Kirk Cousins. We don't know what Penix is going to look like once he gets slotted into the quarterback spot.
Right.
So if you're in New Orleans, yeah, be bad for 2 or 3 seasons. Go get somebody. Again, for argument's sake, Arch Manning, because it would be a nice story. Archie to Arch, you know.
All right.
I mean, it took 6 decades, but we got there. And then go on from there. I don't think they have the stomach for it because they've shown that they don't even believe in retools. They believe in let's just sign cheap free agents, go get Derek Carr and keep on keeping on. It's no.
Right.
You know, when Drew Brees retired, you had a talented lineup, but it was not built for sustainability. And they just keep pushing everything back and back and back. You got to pay that bill, though.
That's got to be on the ownership,
right? There's no dining and dashing in this.
Yeah.
You pay the bill.
And that's got to be on the ownership in terms of just being able to admit when it's over and when you're mm-hmm. ready to do a rebuild. I mean, this is the perfect time for them to do a rebuild, I think, because you're probably going to be in the top 5, maybe top 10 if you get lucky in some wins here, but probably going to be in the top 5 in the draft. You could take a quarterback, but you could also just take, I don't know.
The best player available.
A Travis Hunter.
Ooh, would he play in New Orleans?
Probably not. Deion is listed on here as potential next coach.
On him, though? Colorado.
Yeah.
Way to go. No, in all seriousness, like we kind of attacked him a lot, most of us, for the offseason because they were very vocal.
I did not like them coming into the season.
And it was a bad game to Nebraska, but outside of that, they've been very good this year. Good on them. It looks like Deion's building a program. I want to see a little bit more years of success, like Bastion
right,
Drew Sanders.
Right, but
before I'm going to offer him a head coaching job in the NFL.
But see, that's the thing, is he's not going to do that. he's just absolutely not going to do that.
I don't know. I'm starting to move off my prediction of he's going to leave after this year. I'm starting to move off it a little.
Why?
Because I think actually like they are building a good program.
They are, but he's going to want to just follow his son, which is fine, I guess. Also, but it's just not a great business plan.
I don't think NFL teams are going to look at him and go, oh, you're definitely a success. Or even you're going to put butts in seats. I don't think that's how NFL teams are looking at it. Colorado did burn a lot of its, positivity points last season and into this offseason. They're nice. They're fun. They're good. But you notice even if they've gotten good, they're not showing up on ESPN.
Right.
They're not showing up on Fox Sports. Like, they're less interesting now that they're winning. Mm-hmm. So I think it's sort of the same thing of like, they're not even going to be in the Big 12 championship. They'll probably play in a nice bowl game. If they get to 10 wins, it's awesome. If they get to 9 wins, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to take some time. And, I heard Nick Saban's name on there. No.
Kirby Smart's also on here.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, granted, some of these guys are like way down on the list. Like Ron Rivera's there too.
I do wonder, actually, real quick on this. I actually do wonder, with the changing landscape of college football and having to attack the transfer portal and potentially losing like 25 of your players every year and having to augment that with transfer portal and high school kids, I do wonder if Kirby Smart, who's already won multiple national titles, has done what he has done. Goes, you know what? I'm going to go to the NFL. The South loves me. I don't necessarily know if New Orleans does, but you know what? I've done my bit. I'm going to go there. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. My legacy is still secure. Look how all of us treat Nick Saban's 2 years in Miami. It's an afterthought. It barely gets a chapter in his book. Maybe not even. It'll probably get two paragraphs. It'll be like he went there, he didn't get Drew Brees, he left. I mean, that's what the Miami Dolphins thing is going to be. You know, so I just they are the least interesting opening if I'm a head coaching prospect. And, you know, the main character of that is going to be Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator for Detroit. He 100% is going to be the main guy. He's going to – I joke, but he's going to look at that job and laugh. Look what he did this past offseason. He didn't take a job. And you look at the Washington one now and you go, oh, man, that may have actually been a miscue. You probably should have taken that. Their defense is pretty good. You would have had your pick of Jaden Daniels or Drake May at the time. And ultimately, I feel like either of them probably you feel pretty good about. Drake May is just playing with basically no talent on New Orleans while Jaden Daniels hit the ground running, and he's got some good talent as well. But, he's probably, that's a bit of a misfire. But it also sounds like he's looking at Chicago and Matt Eberflus is gone. There's no shot.
Oh, yeah.
There's no shot. They're waiting on that one. There's no shot. I mean, they get outcoached almost every game. And then you look around at the offense, too. It's a joke. Chicago is going to look at that and go, we need an offensive guy. I could totally imagine just the big trucks of money that, like, Jalen Ramsey used to show up in Jacksonville when he got his contract just rolls up to his house and is like, whatever you want. Whatever you want.
You want to own
half of Chicago? We got you.
I'm once again asking Ben Johnson to go to the Chicago Bears so that way we can have the best revenge story twice a season between him and Dan Campbell.
I just want the NFC North to be like the coolest division.
They already kind of are. I mean, they kind of are pretty fun at this point. I mean, the Bears.
That's what I'm saying. Like, and
the Bears have fallen off a little bit, but the Packers and Vikings and Lions, like those three teams have been amazing. The Lions are probably going to win the Super Bowl. Who would have thought that 2 years ago?
That's going to be so cool.
Like that two. If you would have told me 2 or 3 years ago, hey, the Lions are going to win the Super Bowl in 2024, I would have laughed in your face.
Wait, because 2 years ago, it was like we just came off like a 2-win season. Are you serious?
Yeah, and 3 years ago, it was weren't they on Hard Knocks?
Maybe on Hard Knocks. I just remember the video of Jared Goff's wife in his first season, like freaking out because they won their first game. It was like week 12. And it was like that's the Lions for you.
Yeah.
But, I mean, now you look at them and they're amazing. But like that division would be so cool. Ben Johnson, Chicago. Matt LaFleur in Green Bay. I love Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota.
And then Dan Campbell in Detroit.
And then Dan Campbell in Detroit, who I think is
defensive guru.
But I he's an offensive guy.
Or, well, not special teams. Sorry. Not defensive.
But you'd have that there, and it'd just be like, this is a really cool division. And then I think most people know how I feel about J.J. McCarthy. I think he's going to be awesome for Kevin O'Connell and everything they're doing there.
And if you get the right person in Chicago, I think Caleb Williams can definitely be something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that along with Roma Dunze, I just think they haven't, like you said, they've been outcoached every single game they've been in. They've been outcoached. And the Bears were fun to start the season, but they've kind of like fallen off a little bit here. They've lost their last two, so it's not great, but they do it with the Patriots next, so you can get back in the win column there, probably.
you can get back in the win column there.
Hopefully.
For you. Drake May versus Caleb Williams. Must watch TV.
Ooh,
there we go.
Interesting. I didn't think about that. Then you got the Packers.
Did you see that Drake May touchdown, by the way, to force overtime?
Yes. Did you see number 74? I don't know who it is on the Patriots.
He was trying his best.
He was not. He was not doing anything.
For those that didn't see the play, this poor offensive lineman, like, he was looking for anyone block.
He will be named because it was atrocious.
It felt like he was looking for anyone to block and couldn't find anybody. And then everyone started attacking angles and he just couldn't get to anybody. I felt bad.
You can't have the name Michael Jordan and have a performance like that.
Of course it is. Oh, no.
Michael Jordan, number 74 on the Patriots, was lost in space.
He was looking for anyone to block. I felt so bad. I'm like, this man wants to try. He wants to be a part of this.
He could have fallen back to where Drake May was and potentially blocked back there, but no, he stood his ground. He stood on the line of scrimmage and waited. And then three guys rushed at him and he just threw his hands up like, I don't know what to do.
And it's fair. That's fair.
And to me, yeah, that is fair. But you could have slowed down one of them. Like, just try to get in their way. Like,
just pick your poison. It's like, I'm going to get one of them, but two of these guys are going to fly by me.
Yeah, try to pick the best-looking one, and then, like, you know.
Who looks the most dangerous?
Who looks the fastest?
Oh, boy. Drake May, though, forced overtime. Very, very Josh Allen-esque. Mm-hmm. Just, I'm going to scramble around, and then just out of nowhere, your jaw's on the floor, touchdown pass, Ramondre Stevenson, Quentin Morris this weekend. I think they've got somebody in Drake May. But they need a lot of help talent-wise. But I think they've got the quarterback. Now it's up to New England to not fail him, to not do what like the Chargers have done to Herbert, where it took to what, year 5-6 for them to finally get him a head coach worth anything?
Yeah, and even still, they're having problems. Like, the Chargers are better than usual, but they're still chargering.
It's the Harbaugh effect, man. I was saying in the offseason when they got him, I'm like, I don't love that. I thought it would take a little bit longer. You do have a limited shelf life, though,
mm-hmm.
with Jim Harbaugh as your head coach. They've got about 5 years before he burns out his welcome with ownership, but I think they're going to be a playoff team this year.
Oh, I think so, too.
Be a playoff team for every year he's there.
Right now, they're in the second wild card spot, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at 5-3.
Yeah, they're dangerous, man. They are dangerous. Mm-hmm.
And they have, like...
Especially, I mean, you got Denver, Indy, Cincinnati, and the Jets are, I guess, would say the team's chasing you.
Denver's the...
Cincinnati's the one I'm worried about.
I would say Denver's up there, too, but Cincinnati definitely, because of the fact of, you know, they can turn it on as the season
LA
goes on.
Did beat Denver the first time around at Denver. The next time they'll get them Sunday, December 22nd at home. So... telling you, Chargers could be interesting. 803-0550, the number two call. We're going to switch to hockey as surprise last-minute addition. Paul Hamilton going to join the show after a quick timeout as the Sabres get ready to take on the Ottawa Senators later tonight from KeyBank Center. That's going to be a 6 p.m. pregame, Steve Foley Law pregame show, and a 7 p.m. puck drop. We'll get more on the Sabres coming up next. You're listening to WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Mitt hanging out with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. The Buffalo Sabres do have a hockey game tonight at home. Steve Foley Law pregame show getting going at 6 p.m. for a 7 p.m. puck drop. And for more, as we get ready for tonight's game, we welcome in on the Western Hotline, Paul Hamilton. Paul, good morning. How are we doing today?
I'm well. How are you guys?
I'm good. Paul, I'm a little frustrated, though. We were feeling good with the vibes. Three-game win streak, everything looked good, and now they've lost three in a row.
Yeah, they've ruined everything they had gained.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it's a real eye-opener when you look at the standings and realize the Buffalo Sabres, with a .375 points percentage, only one team in the whole NHL is worse. One. The San Jose Sharks. That's it.
All right, baby. 2015 Yikes. All over again. Here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go.
That's it.
Oh, man.
So there was a lot, and rightfully so. Lindy Ruff and Kevin Adams talked about, you know, they needed to get off to a fast start. And instead of being Thanksgiving, here we are 12 games into the season at Halloween, talking about having to leapfrog pretty much the whole league to try to get into playoff spots. And it's just, you can't put yourself behind the eight ball by it like this. And it's really simple. I mean, you everything you gained at 4-1-1 went away. But you can't survive when you have the league's worst power play, you're 26th in goals against, and 27th on the penalty kill. There is zero chance you will ever make the playoffs with that. You just won't. So it's just, you know, Lindy Ruff yesterday just plain and simply said, I don't want to hear about what we're doing good and we're improving here. We're doing, he goes, we got to win hockey games. That's all I want to hear about. That's it.
So, Paul, I was looking at the standings here and I thought it was a little better than it actually is, but I'm just looking at the teams ahead of the Sabres in terms of wild card. I know it's very early. We're not talking playoffs exactly yet, but the teams ahead of them are also around the same. They're all around 500 for the rest of the Eastern Conference, aside from Washington, who occupies the current number one wild card spot. But every team ahead of you is better than you, yes, but not much better, right? It's not like it's this landslide runaway, the Sabres are already out of it kind of sort of thing. It's still ground you can make up.
You're still in the same problem that I've been harping about since I don't know how long. I never even look at the points. It's not the points. It's the amount of teams you have to leapfrog. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. And usually it's around six. I'm talking about, Thanksgiving time. They've got, it's like, well, if they were in ninth place and only 8 points behind what it was last year, or 6 points behind, or 7 points behind, that's not, you can do that. You can catch one team. But when you've got to catch six teams, that's when it becomes almost impossible, because six teams aren't going to go in the tank for you. And 2 years ago, when they came within a point of making the playoffs, they had to leapfrog six teams, and they kind of got by Pittsburgh. They wound up getting tied with Pittsburgh, which would have been the fifth team to get by, but Pittsburgh would have had the tiebreaker on them, so they had to actually have more points than Pittsburgh. They wound up tied with them, and of course, they didn't catch Florida. So, you had a great run. You played well after, when the pressure was off, you played well after January 1st, but you couldn't leapfrog six teams to get in the playoffs, and that's where the problem lies.
Yeah, it's become a hope and a prayer that both you get good and go on extended runs and pick up loser points, what have you, while also, like you mentioned, six teams all of a sudden going in the tank. It's just, it's not a viable option to try to break this drought. And it's just, Paul, I mean, they started off bad in Europe. They come back and games are starting to build. Okay, like they're starting to build some cohesion. Maybe it was the European trip. Then they go in the 4-1 and run and they win three in a row. They didn't do that until the second half of the season last year. And then, these last three games, it has been so deflating. They can't get Dylan Cousins or Jack Quinn going. Cousins eventually finally got his goal, but I think from what I heard this morning here on our station when Lindy Ruff joined Jeremy and Joe, they're moving Cousins back to center. I assumed that him at the wing was going to go a little bit longer. I don't really know where to go with the special teams, with the goaltending. I mean, you mentioned it. They're in the bottom five for pretty much all of it.
Yeah, he had already moved Cousins back by the third period. It didn't even last the whole game.
Yeah.
He put Paterka out there with them because that's a line that did well in the past. So, he did that. Interesting, we talk about goaltending too. Lukanen stopped 21 of 23 shots against Detroit, lost 2-1. And I asked Lindy Ruff the question because I look at Lukanen and I don't think he's as good as he was last year. I don't think he's awful. I think he's been okay. He's had some really good games, like against Dallas Stars.
Mm-hmm.
He was excellent. But I don't think it's up to last year. And you hear me always talk about big saves at the big time. And I said, I'm not blaming goaltending, but are you getting enough big saves at the big time? And he said, but we're going to need bigger saves at key times. He talked about going to Dylan Larkin's power play goals in Detroit. And he says that's a goal where you want to save on that play. He said Larkin just kind of flung it at the net. And he says, you do have to get big and timely saves. Because a goaltender, he mentioned, can more than anybody win you a game with the right saves at the right time. So it's just something that I don't think they're getting enough of, and he agreed with that. But I wouldn't say they're awful, but I don't think Lukanen also is performing the way he did last year either.
Yeah, and I think that is key too. Is like, I mean, I've seen and I've watched most of these games, and Lukanen, I'll turn on. He makes one big save, and then it does feel like just an easy let up goal, and you're like, all right.
I don't think he's had any easy let up goals. It's just goals that they're not easy mm-hmm. saves.
Yes, yes.
But there's saves, like the Larkin save or mm-hmm. a breakaway. It's not an easy save, but you hope he can bail your guy out. They gave the puck away. Here they come, on a breakaway. Can you bail your guy out? That type of a save that's difficult. But, You know, I can think of maybe one, and was early against New Jersey, where he was floundering out of the net and he couldn't get himself square for the shooter, Hischier, and that went in. That might be the only goal I might consider a bad goal that, you'd want that back. He hasn't had a lot of you want that back, but I don't think he's had enough of, oh, did you see that save?
Which you know, has been mainly frustrating because in the Sabres play, the other goalie does that. It seems like often, if not every night, that a goalie makes a save. You're like, seriously? Like, of course it's against us that you just had the reflexes like the Matrix.
Yeah, no, exactly. So that's another problem. That's a different problem where they make, you know, goaltenders that some of them maybe don't even belong in the NHL or just got called up and they look like Dominic Hasek. But that's a different problem than the Sabres goaltending.
Yeah, the Sabres. When the announcement comes out that they're playing a backup goalie, I start sweating bullets, Paul. It's not good. Do we have an update yet on Zach Benson, his health? Obviously, he goes to IR. It's not like the NFL IR. You've mentioned that a lot, but I did see Ruff talked about him a little bit today.
Yeah, it's trending. I mean, you know, it's trending in there that that he's going to play. But Ruff talked to us before the optional morning skate was over. And, you know, you look at it, he thought they were going to be fine. And but he said he wanted to talk to Benson again. Now, they didn't waive anybody yesterday because they will need a roster spot should he, you know, be able to play. So without waiving somebody, that's no longer an option. So if Benson does play, really their only option would be that I see as I look at the roster sending Kulik to Rochester. That would open up the roster spot to do that. And even if they did that or if they do that, I'm sure the message to Kulik would be you're going to be back. You know, right now we don't have any injuries. Teams get injuries. You know, when we have a roster spot, you're going to be back. You know, go down there, work hard for however many games it is, and when we need you, as long as you're, you know, doing what you're supposed to be doing down there, you'll be back type of it. I think that would be my message to him if indeed he would be the guy to go down.
So, Paul, the Sabres play the Senators tonight, and then they're off to New York on Thursday, back at home for a few games over the weekend into next week. What's the vibe of this next week for you for the schedule? I mean, obviously tonight's a divisional opponent. It's a big game in terms of points on the board. But then the next two games, you're taking on New York, who's conference opponent, sure, but then you're taking on Calgary. It's a completely different conference. So it's obviously every game is important at this point due to how you started, but is there what's the pressure feeling like? Is it building up there yet, or do you think it's still kind of lower on the lower end of things?
I've seen enough of when they play the way Lindy Ruff wants them to play, they could beat any team in the league. I thought they dominated Dallas, who to me might be the second best team in the league, to Florida. And so when they do what they're supposed to be doing, which isn't a lot, they'll be fine. You know, they could win two out of three games there or be in all three of them. So, you know, the Ranger game in New York, not easy, but I've seen them win in Madison Square Garden. I mean, you have to play a solid game, and you know they've got a goaltender that can slam the door on you. But, you know, it's kind of up to them. And, you know, we always ask about the opponent, but really for them, it's not even about the opponent anymore. It's about them. Mm-hmm. They got to figure out how they're going to play. And, you know, don't worry about the Ottawa Senators tonight. You know what they are. If you go out and play the way you're capable of playing, make the Ottawa Senators worry about you. And if they do go out there and play the way they're capable of, the Ottawa Senators will have a problem. So that's the way they should be approaching it, and I know that's the way Lindy Ruff is approaching it. That, you know, just go out there and do what you're capable of doing, and that's going to cause problems for the other team.
All right, Paul. Thank you so much. We'll hear more from you when pregame comes around at 6 o'clock.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
That was Paul Hamilton there on the West Hur Hotline. Yeah, I mean, they've got a rough few games here. Ottawa, I like Ottawa. They're 6-5, right, Josh? They don't have an overtime loss in there. I think they're just 6-5. I've liked them a lot. Allmark has been a really good addition for them. They get then New York Rangers later this week on the road. Yay. And then Calgary on Saturday. Calgary also at home. It's just
they are six. The Senators are 6-5.
6-5. It's just, and you even look at the teams above them in the Atlantic. They're right where they're supposed to be in terms of goal difference, which is they're in the negatives, and that's it's just too much of the standard now. Montreal's minus 17, you're minus 6, Detroit's minus 6, and then Ottawa's the next team, they're plus 9. Then you got minus 8 Boston, but Boston's kind of been a weird team this year. Toronto's at plus 0. They're just kind of finding ways to sort of win games, but Matthews, I think, is week to week now.
He's out tonight.
He's out tonight. Tampa's plus 6, Florida's plus 7. I mean, you're essentially right where you want to be, or not where you want to be, where you deserve to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, but that's the norm. And it, like Paul said too, it's like you barely even worry about the team you're playing. You worry more about what your team's going to look like night to night. Mm-hmm. I thought they had discovered something with that 3-0 run or that 3-game win streak where it was like, hey, you know what? You may not win, 7-8 games in a row, but you're putting a consistent product on the ice. You're proving to yourself you can be consistent and fight teams and maybe drag games to overtime.
Yeah, because even before that, before those three wins in a row, you gave up a bad loss to Columbus, but then mm-hmm. the night before that, you gave up an overtime loss to Pittsburgh, which, again, you forced a game to overtime.
But you got it to overtime.
Yeah. And that's, again, the moral of the story. If you can win if every five games you win three and you put one in overtime, that's a good season. Yeah, it's a great season.
But then, I mean, you lose 5-2 to Florida. You know, Florida had all their guns. I don't think a lot of us were expecting them to win that. But then, I mean, to lose 4-3 to the Islanders, an Islanders team that couldn't score going into that night.
I was at that game and
never allowed back in the building.
I was so listen, it might have been my fault. Sorry. I didn't. Anyway,
when I went, they beat Florida.
But no, I mean, that New York game was the most frustrating game I've ever been to. It was, you have all the energies. Jason Zucker alone created enough energy to power the entire city of Buffalo. Mm-hmm. I mean, that man had a fight, a goal, and an assist. He had a Gordie Howe hat trick. Who's the last Sabre to have a Gordie Howe hat trick? It actually might have been recently. They've been kind of scrappy lately. But anyway, the point is,
Cousins has had one.
Cousins has definitely had one. But the point is you had all of this momentum to feed on, and New York was rolling over and giving you that game, and you just could not stay in the driver's seat. You would get a lead, or you would – I actually don't know if they've led that game. No, they did right away. And then 40 seconds after Cousins scores that power play goal, you're tied again. You led for 40 seconds that whole game.
Yeah, because then you go down 3-1 because of a bad second period.
Mm-hmm.
Zucker
scores in the third just after missing a penalty shot and creating another power play. Or no, I'm sorry, he didn't score in the power play there. But he missed a penalty shot, and then in the ensuing draw, they contained the puck in the zone and they scored. And then you give up another stupid goal at the other end of the ice, and then all of a sudden Owen Power in the last minute of the game scores a great goal.
But
it's too little, too late.
Yeah, you kind of knew it wasn't going to mean anything
right
in the long run. They're such a frustrating organization. They're in for a tough week. But if they go on like a 6-game losing streak here, which they are fully capable of doing,
mm-hmm.
I mean, like Paul said, we're not even at Thanksgiving, and it'll feel like the white flag is being waved.
And look, it's you're there. You're not very far off. Again, the Islanders game should have been a win. And
sure,
it's these games are like should be wins. So you can get there. It's just get the consistency.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. One more segment here before we get you over to Sabres Live at 12 o'clock. You're listening to WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Mint here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Sabres Live coming up here in just under 10 minutes as we get ready for Sabres Senators coming up at 7 o'clock. And then, of course, it is also the NFL trade deadline today, the deadline being at 4 p.m. Eastern. Bills got involved a little bit earlier on in the fall, October-ish, with their trade for Amari Cooper. We have had three trades, though, today so far, them being Jonathan Mingo to the Cowboys, Za'Darius Smith to Detroit, and then Khalil Herbert going to the Bengals. And it's been pretty dead since then, although it was a very fast start, Josh.
Yeah. Zach, the PFF, I don't know why I said the PFF. PFF has out their trade
grades for this.
Grades.
Yes.
So the Lions far and away are the winners so far today. A-plus grade for their trade for Za'Darius Smith. And the Browns got a B-minus. That's not bad.
Good for them.
The Bengals get a B-plus for trading for Khalil Herbert. Bears get a C.
Okay.
Makes sense. Now the Cowboys.
Yeah, baby, let's go. Come on.
I'm upset with you, PFF.
No.
You give the Cowboys a C. C is passing.
That is very true. C's get degrees. This is a fact.
The Panthers got a B plus. I think, honestly, if you're a lawyer, I think the Panthers maybe could get an A minus here.
I mean, for them to get a fourth round pick for Jonathan Mingo. But here's gonna be the problem. He's in his second year, and I think it was a second round pick they drafted him for.
It's
already one of those where it's like, ugh.
Right. That's fair.
The value already doesn't look great.
Their description here is Mingo has struggled to make an impact at the NFL, but the Cowboys are betting on traits that made him a second round pick. The former Ole Miss standout has averaged less than 1 yard per route. Not per reception, per route.
That is not good.
That's crazy.
Also, thing that we didn't point out today, I saw this a lot on Twitter. Khalil Herbert going to the Bengals, their third ever in-season trade for the Cincinnati Bengals. I haven't even looked up the other two. I don't care. The fact that they've only had three in-season trades.
Throw a parade.
Bravo. Bravo.
Have a parade.
Way to just stick to what you are. Love that. That's going to do it for me and Josh. We'll be back on tomorrow from 10 to 12. We'll be joined by Kevin Bowen over in Indianapolis to get more of an idea on the Colts. But coming up next, Sabres Live, as they get ready for Sabres and Senators tonight at 7 o'clock. This is WGR.